According to a new journal article by Assistant Professor in the Faculty of Law at the University of Auckland, Carrie Leonetti, the family court is using poor quality evidence in rulings. I spoke to Leonetti about her findings and what implications using faulty evidence has on the children involved in these cases. What are we seeing regarding how judges, lawyers, and psychologists provide evidence in Aotearoa's family court?
So I'm going to give a little bit of background before I directly answer your question, which is I've done research before into expert evidence in the family court. So when expert psychologists prepare reports for the court around the best interest of children in custody proceedings, or they offer testimony. And the research suggests that a lot of the expert witnesses in the family court are not qualified to perform those evaluations, give that opinion evidence, and that the courts are failing to kind of screen out evidence that isn't based on sort of scientific validity and reliable application. That's the background to all of this. But when I was doing that research into the sort of expert testimony that psychologists were giving in the court, I actually just noticed some things that jumped out at me, and in particular around discussions that either judges or lawyers or psychologists who work in the family court were having of what they claimed to be basically with psychological literature. And I just kind of, it was just really jarring to me that they would talk about, like a judge or a lawyer or a psychologist would say, the literature shows, the research shows, studies show. And what I noticed is, first of all, they wouldn't identify the research. So it was like, the research shows, not Brown in 2005 in this journal article did this study and these were the results. I also noticed that a lot of what followed the sort of precursors of studies show or research shows were just quite frankly ridiculous, just absolutely preposterous propositions. So studies show that all children are better off in joint custody. Studies show that 90% of disclosures of child sexual abuse are false. No, they don't. I mean, that is absolutely ridiculous. There are no studies that show that, and I would love if they specified it to see which ones did. I noticed they used a lot of what I would consider to be very unscientific descriptions of the research. So they really like words like all, none, always, never. So all studies show that something never happened, which is never how science works. There is never 100% consensus in a field, and no individual study ever shows that something happens 100% of the time. I mean, just to give you an example, there's a very strong statistical link between smoking and lung cancer. People who smoke are four times as likely to get lung cancer as people who don't, which is a really strong causal relationship. But not all people who smoke get lung cancer, and not all people with lung cancer smoke. So there are no 100% always, never, all, none relationships in science. I also noticed that on the rare occasion when they actually did specify the literature that they were basing their, the judgment on in the case of the family court, or they were submitting to the court if it was a lawyer or a psychologist, it wasn't science research. It wasn't peer-reviewed health research, peer-reviewed psychology research. It was things like unpublished training materials or just pop psychology, like books you would buy at the airport bookstore in the self-help section. The other huge thing I noticed is, despite all of these constant references to studies and the literature and research, they actually are missing the single most important body of research in the entire field of psychology that bears on the question the family court has to answer. I should probably back up and say 80% of custody cases in the family court are between a domestic violence perpetrator and a domestic violence victim. The perpetrator is seeking care of the children that the victim thinks is unsafe, which is why it's fascinating to me that you never in the family court cases see them cite literature relating to ACEs, which stands for adverse childhood experiences. The ACE literature is a body of thousands, probably tens and maybe even hundreds of thousands of studies that basically measure the relationship between exposure to trauma, and in particular family and sexual violence in childhood, and long-term devastating social, psychological, and even physical health consequences. So for instance, kids who are exposed to abuse as children are far more likely to develop diabetes or cancer in adulthood than people who don't have traumatic violence exposures in childhood, let alone the sort of psychiatric type issues you'd expect, like self-harm, low self-esteem, substance abuse issues. None of this is cited. It's always unspecified literature or pop psychology literature, and never like real peer-reviewed science research, in particular into childhood trauma. So I decided to measure this. Just in a separate study, I thought, I have got to just mathematically measure what the hell they're talking about when they talk about literature, so-called literature in the family court. And these are some of the results of my study. So in 83% of the cases in which a judge claimed that they were basing a custody decision on so-called literature, research, or studies, they didn't indicate what it was. They didn't say who the author was, what the publication was, let alone describe what the study actually studied and the results of the study. 83% of the time, it was just the research shows or the studies show. In 77% of the cases in which they claim to be basing their decision-making on the literature or the research, the so-called literature favored, like ideologically favored, perpetrators of family violence. It's ideological literature that kind of minimizes, sidelines, or distracts from the issue of violence. So they're not citing, they're not claiming like the literature shows exposure to child abuse does long-term damage to kids. It does. It's the literature shows that child abuse isn't that big of a deal. The literature shows that abuse perpetrators don't repeat their abuse. I mean, just crazy sort of Darvo-ish so-called literature. The one that really killed me is in 67% of the cases in which a family court custody decision is based on so-called researcher literature, it is researcher literature into the discredited theory of, quote, parental alienation. 67% of the so-called research they're basing their decisions on is parental alienation research. And I will tell you why that one really galled me. About 2 years ago, New Zealand was undergoing its ninth periodic review for its compliance with the World Gender Equality Treaty by the United Nations Committee on against Discrimination Against Women. And the government gets a list of questions they're asked to answer in their report to the United Nations. And one of the questions the UN asked is, what are you going to do about your family court's use of the discredited, dangerous theory of parental alienation? And when the Ministry of Justice responded to the UN's inquiry 2 years ago, they responded with, we don't use it. We know that parental alienation is dangerous. We know that it's discredited. We know that it's junk science, and our family court isn't using it. No, 67% of the time that the family court claims they are basing custody decisions on so-called scientific research, it's the theory of parental alienation. The theory of parental alienation has been disavowed by all of the world's psychology, psychiatry, and medical associations. Since 2019, the World Health Organization has had a page on their website explaining why they won't put parental alienation into the International Classification of Diseases. And it's because it lacks any evidence basis. And our government told the UN 2 years ago our family court wasn't using this theory. I looked at cases between 2014 and 2022. And 67% of the time, they claim to be using psychology literature. It's this, like, ideological crap about the theory of parental alienation. I found that 17%, so that those are the cases where they basically don't specify the literature or it's parental alienation literature. In the cases where they specify the literature, 17% of the time, they grossly misconstrued it. So just to give you one example, there's an article they love in the family court by, it's called Fidler and Balla, Barbara Jo Fidler and Nicholas Balla from 2010. They cited over and over again for the proposition that the overwhelming majority of children's disclosures of child abuse are false, sometimes specifically for the proposition that 90% of children's disclosures of child abuse are false. Fidler and Balla, in a really methodologically unsound study, but Fidler and Balla found that 11% of children's disclosures of child abuse are false. So they're citing it for the opposite of what the actual article says. I also found on the rare occasion when they tell you what they mean by literature, that they have four favorites. Four authors that they cite over and over again in literally a mathematical majority of the time they identify a study, it's one of four studies, from one of four people. In 50% of the cases in which they actually specify who the research is, it's one guy, Richard Warshak, who is a paid American expert witness. He's just a paid expert witness. He testifies on behalf of violent parents in custody proceedings in the U.S. He has no academic affiliation, no affiliation with any research laboratory. The Fidler and Balla article is number two. That's a law review article. Barbara Jo Fidler, again, is a paid family court consultant in, I think, the United States. Nick Balla is a law professor in Canada. It's in a law review. And then the third one is a woman named Emmy Baker. She is also a paid American expert witness. She's not even a clinical psychologist. She's an educational psychologist. She makes her money testifying in family courts. And the criminal division of the New York, appellate division of the New York Supreme Court has had some colorful things to say about Dr. Baker, and they're not flattering. That's who they're basing their decision-making on. The incredible thing, though, was the lack of scientific literature. So what they're basically using as so-called literature in the family court is just people's random partisan opinions and advocacy. In fact, a lot of what they're using is glorified training materials and marketing materials. In the there were 31 sources. There were 31 times in that period of time where the family court said, we're basing this on the literature, the research study, where I could actually identify what it was. 21 times it was a law review article. That is two-thirds of the time. It was a little more than two-thirds of the time. It's a law review article. And I say this as a legal academic. I published in law review articles, but that is not scientific research. Four times it's a psychology theory journal. So it's not like quantify data, evidence-based stuff. It's more like the kind of journal Freud would publish in if he were still alive. Three of the times, it was just handouts from legal seminars or training. Two of the time, it was popular psychology books, so books published in the popular press, like Random House and Penguin. No offense to them, but not academic research. One time, it was a psychiatry textbook. Like, if you took Psych 101, it was a textbook that would be assigned for the class. There was not a single reference to a peer-reviewed science journal or to any scientific research hall in all of the family court judgments I could find where they claim to be basing their decisions on research. Instead, it's just like psychobabble nonsense.
What are the repercussions with ruling based on evidence that has not been peer-reviewed, especially on children?
So this is one of the really horrifying things is it's not like they're just pulling at random a bunch of garbage that would obviously just lead to unpredictable, unreliable, inaccurate decision-making. But it's actually putting a thumb on the scale, right? So they're not this sort of scientific research about ACEs, which would demonstrate that children being exposed to family violence is incredibly damaging to them. Instead, they're using this, like, you know, marketing materials for these expert witnesses in America, claiming that, like, parental alienation, that not having a relationship with a violent father does more harm to a child than being protected from ongoing violence. So it's not just that they're cherry-picking junk psychology over the actual scientific research coming out of, like, labs and academic institutions, but it's that it has an ideological tilt. I mean, the constant sort of criticism of our family courts is that they lack a specialized evidence-based understanding of family violence or risk assessment with regarding to child safety. And instead, they sort of subscribe to these pervasive myths and misunderstandings. Like, they know that partner violence is situational. So as long as the victim and the perpetrator separate, there won't be any more violence, which is the opposite of what studies show. Studies show that the risk both to the primary victim and to children increases, including the risk of lethality increases in about 2 years after separation, for the 2 years after separation. And, you know, these sort of pervasive myths that there's somehow no relationship between intimate partner violence and child abuse. Like, somebody can be incredibly violent to a partner, but they can just still be a good enough father. So it's not just that they're ignoring the science that says otherwise. They're cherry-picking the non-science that sort of feeds into this need to put children in the custody of violent, in particular, fathers. And I just want to give you an example out of a case. This is like an actual case that I found, just so people get a flavor of this. So this is a custody battle between a father with a history of family violence and a protective victim mother who was worried about the child in care of the father. So the lawyer for the father says this. This is in quotation marks. This is a quote. The literature on the impact of children being caught in parental conflict is never benign. Parental alienation is the most damaging experience that a child could have. And children who are exposed to parental alienation have a strong likelihood of developing a disturbance in their growing identity. Mom's lawyer responded with, basically, her exact words were, overly simplistic. I think that's an overly simplistic understanding of psychological literature. Yeah, you think? I'm pretty sure the literature doesn't show that parental alienation is more harmful to children than being exposed to violence. The judge sided with the father. And this is a direct quote from the judge. There is, quote, a consensus, and so just to be clear, no literature is specified. There is a consensus that it is central to every child's well-being and development that they have a positive paternal relationship. So the judge claims, without citing any studies, that 100% of children will be damaged if they're not in the shared care of their father, even in a case where the father is violent. That is the consequence of basing your decision-making on unspecified literature, on pseudoscientific parental alienation literature, on marketing materials from paid American expert witnesses who make their money testifying on behalf of violent fathers in American family courts, and just insisting that there's a global consensus that something is central to every child. I mean, you know you're not dealing with science when you see a word like every. You know you're not dealing with science when you say there's a universal consensus. Just to put this in perspective for you, in the context of the question of whether human activity affects climate change, has an impact on the climate, there's still about 6% of climatologists who don't think so, that don't think human behavior, like things like factories and pollution and carbon dioxide, release, has any impact on climate change. There is never 100% consensus in the field. And I think the consensus on the relationship between human activity and climate change is one of the strongest I've ever seen in the scientific field. So of course, there is not a universal consensus that all children have to be in the custody of their father or they'll have damaged well-being and development. That's insane. There's no literature that shows that all children who live in the home of a single mother end up damaged in adulthood. There is literature that shows a strong statistical relationship between being exposed to a violent father's violence and and long-term terrible psychosocial and physical health consequences. They're picking crappy literature that leads to a really unsafe outcome over the real scientific literature that would lead to much safer outcomes for children in the court.
With your findings, how would you like to see the space better regulated?
First of all, in the first instance, I would like to see family court judges be much more careful what they're basing their decision-making on. I mean, like I said, my earlier research indicates that they are allowing psychologists to give testimony in their court that is not sort of based on scientifically validated research and is not applied in a reliable way to forensic context. And in fact, they're allowing psychologists to testify who don't have any forensic qualifications. They're also apparently allowing not just psychologists, but lawyers at this point in time, lawyers for the parents, lawyers for the child, to sort of give their imprimatur on this supposed social science literature. So they just need to stop. They need to acknowledge that if you're going to try to use science to enhance your decision-making, it needs to be good science that's offered by qualified experts. They need to use validated science that's being explained to the court by an expert who's qualified to do so, and stop just letting, for example, a lawyer for the child or a lawyer for a violent father give them some assurance in a court submission that the research says something. Second, appeals courts have to do something about this. There's actually quite a lot of case law at the appellate level that says that lawyers and judges should not use social science evidence, even good social science evidence, in the absence of sort of scaffolding of expert evidence, right? So an expert can give an expert opinion and then explain to the court the literature on which they're basing the opinion. But the fact of the matter is lawyers and judges shouldn't be playing games with so-called social science literature at all. No judge should say, I'm familiar with the literature. This is a quote out of a different case from a judge. The judge said that he was basing his custody decision, this is giving custody to a violence perpetrator, and this is what he said, on my, quote, this is in quotes, general knowledge of the psychological and sociological literature in relation to child development. So no appellate court should let that stand. A judge cannot make a decision on what they claim to be their general psychological and sociological knowledge. If the judge needs psychology expertise to make a decision, they need to get a qualified psychologist to explain the literature to them. And there are cases on this, on how lawyers shouldn't be making submissions about social science evidence. Judges shouldn't be sort of taking judicial notice of social science evidence. So appellate courts have to start stepping in and overturning these custody decisions and saying to family court judges, you can't call on qualified experts, you can't let experts testify to opinions that aren't based on reliable methodology, and you can't just make decisions on some, you know, unspecified literature, psychology literature, or worse yet, junk science literature that has an incredibly partisan and ideological tilt to it. I mean, this sort of has to be cleaned up.
That was the University of Auckland's Carrie Leonetti on using poor quality evidence in family court rulings.